This is head coach of the LA Lakers, Luke Walton. You're listening to The Popcorn Machine on Lakers.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Popcorn Machine on Lakers.com. Joey Ramirez here at the UCLA Health Training Center with Mike Trudell. What's up, Mike?
That is me, Joey. We wanted to do a little impromptu pod just coming off of the Lakers' win last night against Cleveland and coming out of practice. And you and I were talking before we started recording. The thing that's impressed me the most, Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart go out. And so that was about a week and a half ago. Miami, the game was March 1st. Since then, the Lakers are 3-2, but in the two losses, one was home against Portland. Of course, they were up, 12-14, and Damian Lillard went on his insane run.
Yep.
But it was a competitive game. They were in it the whole time. And then, of course, the close loss at Denver when they were up with about 5 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. Then, of course, they take care of Cleveland quite handily. Orlando, they had to sweat out, but they were mostly in pretty firm control. And then the game in San Antonio, when they had the crazy comeback capped by the Lonzo Ball, three threes in the final couple minutes. And I've been very interested, Joey, about how Luke Walton and the staff has been getting these results and getting the players to all continue to buy in and play a certain way, even when injuries have been affecting rotations in a big way. And that's the first thing I wanted to throw back at you. So rotations are so important in the NBA. Wing positions are so important. What have you noticed specifically just about how they tried to handle and cover for that these last couple of games without Ingram and Hart?
Yeah, I mean, the success that this team has had, honestly, it surprised me without a ton of wings. In fact, the only healthy wing on the roster is KCP at this point. When you don't have Brandon Ingram, you don't have Josh Hart, and you waived Corey Brewer. And that all happened in a span of, 3 days?
So basically, yeah.
Kind of put behind the eight ball right there. What they've done in that stead is, A, have Kyle Kuzma play the three, which is something that when he first arrived here in L.A., he said that is a goal of his to be a multi-positional player, specifically the four and the three. But he also said that that's something that is more of a career goal that he didn't really see happening in his rookie year. But by necessity, he is now starting at the three. And I think he's done a pretty good job of it. He's still kind of in that shooting slump that's plagued him over recent weeks. But he's playing a lot better defensively. He's hitting the boards more. And when you're playing out of position, you kind of got to take what you can get, especially from a rookie. Another thing that they've done is play really guard-heavy lineups, of course. At times, playing three point guards on the floor at the same time. Usually a combination of Lonzo, IT, and maybe someone like an Alex Caruso, or have we seen Gary Payton in a minute?
Not much, but that was the lineup that they even used, where Lonzo was basically playing small forward defensively, and he a couple of different times he helped off of Kyle Korver, which resulted in immediate 3-point makes.
Yeah,
right? So those are some of the. It's funny.
Because that's one of the nuances. Like, if you're Lonzo Ball, you're a point guard rookie, and all of a sudden you're tasked with staying attached to one of the best shooters in the league, and just not really understanding the nuances of playing that position defensively. It's kind of tricky. So
that's the reason why I've been impressed with the overall play, because stuff like that is not an easy thing to do, especially for young players. And so you get switched over on Korver. Now, first of all, Cleveland is running him off screens, so that's one thing Lonzo's not used to doing. Second, LeBron James has the basketball, and therefore he's going to see any little mistake. And we saw that with the note. Okay, the reason why the SportsCenter highlight that we saw, right, which was LeBron sort of palm the ball out to fake. It was Korver that was coming around the curl, and that's where everybody was freaking out.
Right.
And then he just did the touch pass, and was it Zizic? At that point, and so Zizic finishes at the rim, but that's the kind of thing now that would have been, you know, either Josh Hart or maybe if Ingram's in the game at that point still, guys that are used to defending that, Corey Brewer, so therefore Luke said they had all these defensive breakdowns last night, and guess what, they won 127-113 against Cleveland. So I think it's just important to note at this stage. And LeBron actually echoed this in his postgame comments. He said that they've gotten better every little while that Luke Walton's been there. And, you know, LeBron's somebody that respects Luke, and you could just see that happening even when they're not necessarily in the right spots. The rotations are messed up, and that's an interesting place to be for the Lakers.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing that really stands out to me is, from the beginning of this front office, we've heard about multi-positional basketball, or rather, position-less basketball, and wanting guys that can go across different positions. We've seen that in certain circumstances, whether it's how much the Lakers like to switch on defense, or whether it's the way that they play stylistically offensively and to a certain extent how they exploit switches against other teams, specifically guys like Julius Randle. And the last few games without these wings, I think is we've seen that positionless basketball amped up to a new degree. Whether it's Kyle Kuzma playing down a position, whether it's Lonzo Ball, like you're saying, playing spurts at the three, which is something you don't see from a point guard, obviously, but Lonzo's a big point guard. He's kind of a different animal than what we're seeing from most points around the league. So, and specifically Julius Randle. He plays the four and the five, and that's something that's not new. That's something that's happened all season long, but he's effective at both positions.
Right.
And so that kind of mantra that the front office took over the summer, I think we're really seeing it shine through in this hot streak that the Lakers are having.
Yeah, one of the easiest ways to think about that, for some teams it's a problem, for some teams it's not, it's just look at the finals the last couple of years. And so you have the Cavs and the Warriors. And the Warriors, there isn't really a player in their, at least in their preferred lineup, that you can just say, oh, great, I'm gonna get him to switch over on something.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe Steph Curry, but he's better defensively than people think, especially off the ball, and he's a little stronger on the ball than you think. And so if that's the one guy, fine, because he's by far the best offensive player in the league in terms of on-off numbers and in terms of the impact that he has on the defense and how much they just get completely screwed by his presence on the court. And so with the Lakers right now, who is the guy that you're going to try to target, let's say in a playoff series and a switch for something? Well, it's certainly not Julius Randle.
Right.
It's definitely not Brandon Ingram. It's not Josh Hart. It's not Lonzo. And so just right there, now I think Brook Lopez, there are certain teams that could try to get him into the old chase the screen roll from the top, but he's better at that than some.
Yeah, and I just want to point out real quick, LeBron James was 0-3 against Brook Lopez last night.
Yeah. And so he's so long, and he moves his feet well enough, and he's pretty smart, so like he's not a guy that just completely is going to go get cooked on the perimeter, and so that's same thing with KCP. He's not a guy that you pick on in that kind of a context. So that's one of the, now Isaiah Thomas might be,
right,
for almost any team, that's, right? But even in that case, you know, you have players that can sort of cover for that. You can always have one on the court, you know, almost most teams, because then you can double, you can trap, whatever. Whereas Cleveland, think about their lineups in the last couple of years, there was Kyrie, there was Kevin Love, J.R. Smith lately has not been as much of an impact player defensively, and we saw that last night. And, you know, that's an interesting formula that the Lakers have used, even with some guys out injured, and that's certainly an encouraging thing. But here, look, you made a point earlier about Kuzma. I want to get back to you so we can break into it a little bit. I got his game log in front of us. So he's been playing the three now for essentially five straight games, and he's actually shooting. So in March, he shot the ball well three games, and he's shot the ball poorly for three games. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say poorly. One game he was 4-for-10, which is, you know, one more goes in, he's 50%. But he was 4-for-13 against San Antonio, 4-for-14 against Cleveland, 5-for-10 at Denver, 9-for-16 against Orlando, and 6-for-10 at Miami. So I think that in that sense, you know, his offense is coming around some, but what you've noticed and what Luke Walton has been noticing, defensively, passing the ball, just doing little things, that stuff seems to be coming more, which is certainly a good thing to see, because you didn't want Kuzma to get put into this box of being a guy who's just like a taller Lou Williams type player.
Yeah.
Right, where he comes and gives you a hot streak on offense. He's showing some more stuff to his game. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I like your comp that you just made, a taller Lou Williams. That is kind of something you want to avoid. And all credit to Lou Williams, who is some would say borderline all-star this year.
I wouldn't say borderline all-star. But many see, would. You said some would say.
I said some would say.
I would not say
I
that.
I kind of knew where you were leaning on that one. Yes. So. But you also, you're right, you don't want a guy being one-dimensional, especially a guy who does have some physical tools like Kyle that you kind of got to teach him how to use.
Yeah.
And a guy who is top five in his conference collegiately when it comes to scoring and rebounding, you want to see him kind of get that rebounding streak that he's gotten lately, because you know that's in him. And specifically the way the Lakers like to play when it comes to rebounding, they're one of the best rebounding teams in the league, first just off the bat. I think they're top three.
Yeah.
And the way they like to do it is they like to have their bigs box out. They like to have people like to complain that Brooke Lopez, right, he had 27 points the other night and zero rebounds. And, mm-hmm. Some people chose to highlight the zero rebounds more than 27 points, which I don't necessarily understand. But regardless.
Well, look, you have to allow, though. It's
an oddity. Yes.
It's you know, jinx there. Sure. But it's worth noting. But you could look. So his average on the season, what is it, like 4 or 5?
Something like
rebounds?
That.
I want to say?
Yeah.
So not even 4. So he's averaging 3.8 rebounds on the season. Now, it's going to be, you know, he was not playing many minutes, so that's one thing, but still, I'd say in March he's averaging 4.2 rebounds. And this is when in February when his minutes were, had started to go up some, 3.7. So there's, even though you're right that he, yes, he's good at boxing out. Other guys come in, the guards rebound really well.
Right.
Lonzo and when Josh Hart was in there, that's one of the best rebounding backcourts in the whole NBA. Mm-hmm. Even though they're rookies. But Brook could probably still grab a couple more rebounds here or there.
That's fair to say. But my point was that he's a guy who's asked to box out. Julius Randle is also like that, but he's just a rebound magnet that he ends up getting double doubles anyway. And like you were saying, the guards come in, Lonzo Ball comes in, Josh Hart comes in, and with Josh.
By the way, KCP, who's been all over the glass, yeah.
With Josh and BI out, we've seen KCP and Kyle kind of take over and come charging down the lane, taking advantage of those box outs and grabbing those boards.
KCP on the season now is up to 5.4 rebounds.
Yeah.
This month, 7.2. Last month, 7.0. So between... Actually, look, I would be surprised. I haven't done any research on this at all. But if there's a better backcourt rebounding team than Lonzo, KCP, and Josh Hart, I would be shocked.
I agree with that, yeah.
Okay, maybe OKC, just because Westbrook is such a dominant rebounder. But whoever is playing next to Russ... I wouldn't say necessarily gets a ton of boards. Like they've started at times. Alex Abrines has played a little bit. Josh Huestis, I guess, is a pretty good rebounder. But yeah. Still,
if Robertson's in the lineup.
Maybe. Yeah, when Robertson was playing for sure, that would be probably the next group or the only other team that I could think of, right, that has that kind of a rebounding edge. But still, that's an important thing for the Lakers. And I guess to your point about rebounding and Brook Lopez. As long as if you look at the rebounding percentage when he's on the floor, it's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
So he takes up space, he boxes out, all that, and the Lakers have good guards. So the whole point is that the team must clear a defensive rebound. It doesn't technically matter who gets it, as long as you're clearing the rebound. But anyway.
When you brought up KCP, he is tied with Jimmy Butler for the most rebounds among shooting guards in the NBA right now.
Yeah, there you go. Oladipo up there.
Yeah. Jalen Brown,
yeah.
Stevenson.
Yeah. So, all right. So, anyway, the signs for... Kuzma, sometimes I like to think about, since the Lakers are in this weird spot this year, pull up the standings, will you? So they're in the spot where they're almost locked into this 11 spot. Now there's a chance, I guess, right, if let's say that either the Clippers or the Nuggets or the Jazz just had some sort of a collapse and, you know, one of them, some key player got hurt. But even, you know, Utah has won 6 games in a row. They've won 8 of 10. The Nuggets right now have won 2 in a row, 6 of 10. Clippers have won 7 of 10. The only team that's bottoming out right now is basically the San Antonio Spurs, who have won only 2 of their last 10. But they even have 29 losses to the Lakers, 36. So the Lakers are going to keep... I would be very surprised if they can at least win half their games, just the way they're playing, right? They're playing really hard. It hasn't mattered as much as we thought maybe that Ingram and Hart have been out because they've got this formula going. So that I'm expanding on the simple point that if they're more or less in this spot where nobody behind them is catching them, okay, Sacramento, Dallas, Phoenix, Memphis, way behind, and it's going to be difficult for them to catch anybody ahead of them, I'm trying to look at how these games now can apply to the future. And in Kuzma's case, how can what he's been showing now apply to where the Lakers want to go in the next couple of years? And that's why, just like when Ingram was filling in a backup point guard, it's so good to see that he can learn a little bit more of the three in actual real minutes on the court, not just a stint here or there. That he can defend, that he can move the ball, that he can rebound. These the things that you learned about Josh Hart, right, when he had to fill in spot 3.
Yeah.
And that's what's exciting, is that the Lakers, while winning, are still finding ways to get a look at a different type of style that these young players that are going to be here for a while are playing.
Yeah, and I totally agree with what you're saying, especially an earlier point that we talked about when it comes to switching defensively and guys that the Lakers don't exactly have a lot of guys that you would want to pick on. Kyle Kuzma at this point in his career might be one of those guys that, given the options that a team would have, like, yeah, we'll try to go at Kuz as opposed to going to get Josh Hart or Lonzo Ball.
Yeah.
And so, like you're saying, if he's getting all these minutes both at the 4 and the 3, and he's learning things outside of scoring, then this is one of those areas that will pay dividends later in his career.
Right.
Mike, we made it 15 minutes in this podcast without talking about Julius Randle, who had 36 points, 14 rebounds, and 7 assists last night. Do we want to correct that?
Yeah, you're right. I just noticed that. I haven't said his name yet. So, Randle, I guess maybe the reason why is that he's kind of a, right now, he's almost a whole podcast on his own.
Yeah,
I've been talking about Randall. I talked about Randall with three or four different reporters that were in last night. That there was a bunch of people, of course, to see the Cavs-Lakers matchup. I've been talking about him with some of the people in the basketball ops office. I've been talking about him with some of the assistant coaches. We've been talking about him in a group chat. And so let's just, I'm trying to think of the best way to summarize what we've seen. So the one thing that I think that maybe this isn't a popular opinion now, but I think that he was playing just about this well early in the season. And I think right now the popular opinion is, oh, well, look, he's gotten better every month. And he has, but the main reason is because his minutes have gone up every month.
Yeah.
And so Julius, if you asked him, and I've asked him this, he thinks that he's just played the same way the whole time. And are more people paying attention now? Yes. Are his? Do you want to pull up it? Go ahead and pull up his game log month by month if you want. But the best way to look at this, Joey, and we did this back in November on the podcast, is to pull up his per 36 minutes. And I think that now it's harder to split that up month to month. We'd have to take a deeper dive to do that. But it's not that hard to divide, you know, the minutes divided by points, rebounds divided by points, and they more or less line up. It might be a like, now the one thing that he's being more efficient, I think, at least in terms of shooting the ball, at least a little bit better. So in November, right, he was 53%, December 56%, January 54%, February 58.9%, and now March 59%. So he has gotten a little bit more efficient, and he's shooting free throws definitely better.
Yeah.
So that's one big improvement, but that's marginal. You know, 55 to 58, that's making like one more shot per game, essentially, right? And so the rebounding numbers, same thing. The points are going up, I think, partly because of the free throws. But the bottom line is he's been really good all year, and now more people are noticing that he's really good. But that's my way of thinking about it is now just like what I said a moment ago. What does this mean for the Lakers' future? And on the one hand, they may have an even better understanding of what his value is, and that's important as they decide whether or not they're going to be able to or want to keep him. And the next part of it is, how much are other teams noticing that they may not have noticed before, right, early in the season, and how is that going to impact a potential offer that some other team could throw at him? And this is us just, you know, completely speculating. Of course, we have no idea of what the Lakers or any team around the league is thinking. But that's why, for me, there's just so much to talk about with Randall that I'll try to do, or you can do for it. Like, give me one thing, okay? What's one thing that, as you've been watching these games and you wrote a Randall piece recently, what's one thing that is standing out the most to you about Julius?
So it's the thing that I asked Kyle Kuzma about today. I actually gave Kyle a pretty generic question. I asked him, hey, you've been here for a year, and this has been the year that Julius Randall has, from start to where we are now, probably grown the most within the season. Where have you seen him grow the most? And Kyle pretty quickly said, passing out of the post. And I think that speaks to a greater understanding that Julius has of his own game, in the sense that he's so successful out of the post this season. Last year, let's start with 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He was in the 18th percentile of post-up scoring. That's pretty awful. Last year, he was 15th, so he took a step back from awful. This year, he's 59th. And that is the entire season. That doesn't just count for post-All-Star or the past 2 months or whatever, in which case he has been one of the best post-up players in the league. So he's gone from awful, awful to above average, and at this point of the season, really, really good in that department. And so he's seeing more double teams. He's naturally, defenses are going to try to adjust to that. They're going to throw bigger defenders on him. They're going to throw double teams at him. They're going to try to switch on him less. And when they do that, Julius, he has the understanding of, I know that I'm going to attract attention, I'm going to find a shooter, I'm going to find a cutter. I see the floor better than most every other power forward in this league. I was looking at the numbers, the last 12 games in which Randall has taken his game to a new level, he leads the league in assists out of post-ups. And he has three more than the next guy in those 12 games. So I think me and Kyle both agree that just the way Julius understands the way the defenses are playing him and how he can leverage his own success into a greater team function is what is impressing me the most.
That's an interesting point, and I agree with it. So let's try to square the two things that we just said, because it seems like they're contradictory, right? So on the one hand, I'm saying he's been good all year, right? And then on the other hand, you're saying, well, yeah, but here's one specific clear area of improvement. And I can piggyback on that point, and again, hopefully it's not contradictory. He's very obviously gotten much better at finishing. And so the numbers are there, and this is without using his right hand at all. And that was part of the knock coming into the season. Well, he's really going to have to develop the jumper. He's really going to have to develop his right hand. Otherwise, he's going to keep running into this brick wall. And if you watched him even last year, there was a lot of catch, gather, head down, drive straight into the defense.
Yeah.
If it was against Dallas, it was fine because they probably had Dirk and Harrison Barnes playing at the 4-5 and he just scored either way. If it was playing against Utah or New Orleans or any team, San Antonio, with a good interior defense, he was probably having a bad shooting night because he just wasn't finishing. So that I think has developed the off season almost alone. He got better at that. But even from now until from where today compared to October, that's also gotten better. So I will acknowledge that, yes, I do think that he's gotten better in a lot of areas in the season. But even when he wasn't doing that, his general just productivity and energy and activity and tradition and running and being fast and being strong, everything, he was still very effective in October and in November.
Yeah.
And his field goal percentage wasn't that far behind either. So that's the I guess what I'm saying, that both these things are true, but whereas he continues to improve in a micro way, his macro improvement has been there since the start of the season.
Yes, and to your points, you cannot be consistently really good in the NBA doing the exact same thing the entire season because defenses will adjust to you. And so to kind of this concept...
Unless you're LeBron or Durant.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. But even those guys are so versatile at what they do that they do switch it up a lot, just the way that they attack defenses.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we've seen with Julius. Like, for the beginning of the season, it was a lot of pick and roll. And last night, it was a lot of pick and roll. And he's one of the best pick and roll finishers in the league. We've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast. Lately, it's been post-ups. And even more recently, it's been passing out of post-ups. And it's just all these little nuances that when you take a look at the bigger picture, he's painting with different brushes, but the picture is consistent.
Okay, now let me try to push back again.
All right, let's do this.
Portland the other day had Jusuf Nurkić on Randall for certain parts of the game. And he weighs, 275 pounds, something like that, 280 pounds?
Gotta be.
And Julius seems to give zero anythings about that. And on two or three possessions, he literally shoved they made body contact and Nurkić bounced off him.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there courtside just thinking, okay, now even the biggest centers in the league, now maybe, I don't know, I haven't seen him do it against Embiid in that way yet, but my guess is, especially with his center of balance and stuff, he could probably bounce Embiid off him a little bit. So while I'm not sure that, and I this is to bring Luke Walton into this, I asked Luke at practice today about Julius. Blake Griffin is an example that I've used before, thinking of, okay, remember early in Blake's career, it was nothing but dunks, or so it seemed.
Yeah.
And sure, the highlights were dunks, but when you watched him play in games, he was getting to the rim, no one could do anything about it. That just was what it was. Eventually, here's the one difference right away, and you can knock on wood, not just for Julius, but for any player, and injuries. Injuries have been a part of this for Blake, but his knees, some of the things have forced him to develop his game. Now he's a jump shooter a lot of times. He's taking long twos, he's taking threes. He doesn't have that same explosion around the rim. I asked Luke essentially about this, and what you don't want for Julius is to remove pressure on the defense. And him, right now, even though he's improved with his jumper, and we've seen him hit it in practice all the time, I almost don't want him taking that shot, even if it's open, because he's not. Last year, I would have thought, you got to develop that jump shot because you're just not finishing it. When a team basically just steps, if Rudy Gobert steps off you and puts his hands up, you're just going to drive right into him. Now against Nurkić, against whoever, he just seems to still score anyway.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, and if the defense is super concerned about you, and somebody's going to come over when you drive, even if it's one of these shot blockers, then instead of taking that jumper, go ahead and drive and then kick. Or drive. So that's the thing with Julius, is that his game now, and you said, you're right, no player just does the same thing all year and has it work. I'm not sure that Julius hasn't done that all year and it's just worked, and no defense has really been able to figure it out. And so therefore, what I don't want, or I guess what the Lakers coaches and Luke said this don't want, they don't want him giving the defense a break by just pulling up for a jump shot. I guess there are exceptions, but generally, as the course of a game goes on. And that's my, I don't even know if it's a counter, but it's just an adjunct to your point then, is that I don't know if teams have been able to handle what he just does consistently well.
Yeah, and to your point, the thing that everyone is obsessed with is quality of shot, right? And rightfully so. That's how you win the game, is getting the most high-quality shots that you can get. And a lot of people like to take that to mean three-pointers and layups, which, if you're talking very generally, that is true. Three-pointers and layups are the most efficient shots. But if you go to an individual level, every guy is different. Not every guy's three-pointers and layups. And that won't necessarily be the most efficient shot for every guy. So a lot of devalued shots in terms of the conversation that we have about basketball, for example, are mid-range or in the paint but not in the restricted area. If you're DeMar DeRozan, you want him shooting in the mid-range. If you're Jimmy Butler, you want him shooting in the paint outside the restricted area, because those are just two guys that are really good at getting those shots, and that because of their skill sets, those are high-quality shots for them. Julius Randle's kind of the same in that sense, in that a contested shot at the rim is probably still a higher quality shot than an open mid-range jumper, kind of like what you're saying.
Well, that's the good news for Randle, too, though, is that he isn't somebody that's just been really effective by, you know, making a bunch of, like, floaters and sort of mid-turnaround stuff. Like, he's getting to the rim.
Yeah.
And so he fits into that 2018 Mike D'Antoni, you know, understanding of offense without even having to do much on the perimeter. So it's exciting to me then to try to figure out where his game might go next. But in the short term, he's certainly out of something. All right, Joey, you've been writing a lot these last couple weeks, and give me something recent that has popped into your brain that people need to know before we get out of here.
Oh man, it's a lot of Julius Randle right now. We obviously just went through that. I would say.
Oh, no! Do this. You gave me a great stat on the broadcast last night. So I texted you in the third quarter about 3-point shooting, right?
Yeah.
I texted you in the third quarter and I said, hey, I know the Lakers have been making a lot of threes since the All-Star break, and my guess it was around like 13 or something per game. But I didn't know what it was before that. And sometimes when I'm about to go to a sideline hit or something, Joey, within the course of 30 seconds, can look up and find the answers to things, which is ironic because that's what I used to do, and now you do it better. What you came up with was quite interesting. Do you have the stat right in front of you?
Yep, got it. And this is pre-last night, just to clarify.
Yes, and last night they hit how many threes?
Let me get that for you real quick. Last night, the Lakers hit 13 three-pointers on a 38% clip.
Okay, so now just give me the breakdown of what you sent me.
So, last night, before the All-Star break, the Lakers were 23rd in three-pointers made, 29th in three-point percentage, and 11th in scoring. And not great numbers. Post-All-Star break, they have been second in made three-pointers with 14 a night, first leading the league in three-point percentage, 41%, and third in scoring, 117 a night, and obviously that went up after the Lakers scored 127 on the Cavs.
So the sample size is 8 games since the break?
The sample size is...
How many since the break? So Dallas was the first one after the break. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9 games.
9 games.
So, okay, so let's wait, let's see, right, for the rest of the season what it ends up in. But here's the why behind that, and I asked Stu, I think, on the broadcast, but why has it gone up that much? Well, there are a couple of obvious reasons. So Isaiah Thomas in the second unit, he's good at getting people shots. He's been doing that, and he hits a couple threes himself, even if not at he's hasn't gotten to his most efficient level yet. Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart, this is where the irony is, though, because they haven't really played since the All-Star break. Ingram had a couple games in, but both had gotten much better, and they were, in fact, the team's two leading three-point shooters for a while. But KCP has been red hot from three.
Really good.
Lonzo has been... you could basically say red hot from three. Like, so he didn't shoot the ball well last night. Actually, I guess that's two straight games now. Two straight home games, I should say, at least, for three-pointers. But since the break, though, he's still 40% plus, right? So you have individual guys shooting the ball better. Is the spacing better? Is Kuzma being the starting line? Like, what else have you seen just generally about why they have made such a big jump in three-point shooting?
I think it's a mix of, like you're saying, personnel is a little different. You have Isaiah Thomas coming in, a guy who shoots threes and creates threes, And the second point is more of a team-wide thing, which I think is even more so important, is that you have Lonzo Ball back in the lineup. He missed, what, a month or two due to that injury. Mm-hmm. He gets guys a bunch of open looks from three-point range. Yep. Isaiah Thomas does that really, really well. He's such a good...
Julius, you mentioned.
Right? Julius does that. Isaiah is such a great drive and kick playmaker that I think he could get 10 assists every night if he really put his mind to it, even if he's coming off the bench. And like you're saying, KCP is hitting the three shot really well. Lonzo Ball is. You have even like we're talking about even small personnel tweaks, like Travis Ware coming in off the South Bay Lakers and hitting a three or two a night in whatever three or four games that he's been up here. That'll skew the numbers a little bit more toward the Lakers' favor. It's kind of what we were talking about earlier. It's quality of shot, a lot of open threes, and it's personnel. It's the guys that are on this team are equipped to hit those shots.
And the last thing I'll say about it is I think the pace that they've played with has helped this too. And they've played with a fast pace all year, but they've now, it's like they've figured out their pace finally.
Yeah.
And they know what their pace is going to be, and I think it's wearing on teams. And so now that, and you saw it, like Cleveland looked, there was a point that LeBron, I saw, looked over at about with like 3 minutes left in the third quarter, and just kind of, just one of those like, man, like, it's like, are we really going to keep up with these guys the whole game? And so that's a good thing to see. All right, let's leave it at that. Joey Ramirez, Mike Trudell on the Popcorn Machine. Pretty fun watching Laker basketball right now, and it'll be interesting to see if they get a little revenge on Denver tomorrow night. Joey.
Yeah, that is going to be a fun one to
see. All right, see you next time.
Oh, did he put Person in the Popcorn Machine?
Yeah, Person ran at him out of control, and he paid the price.